Today on Making Sense with Rob Case, when you hear the words the Bible, what is your central reaction? Do you have a favorable view of it, an unfavorable view of it, or do you have no opinion at all over it because even though you might be aware of it, maybe you don't have a particular interest towards it? Whatever your outlook is, I'm sure that this program will offer you a fresh and unique perspective on the book that has changed lives, cultures, and the course of human history, and continues to do so today. So join us, won't you, as we take a look at the most popular and most important book in the world, the Bible, on this edition of Making Sense with Rob Case. Welcome to Making Sense with Rob Case. I am your host, Rob Case. The Bible is the most influential book ever to be compiled, and for a variety of reasons. It is the most popular book ever to be sold. It has influenced kings, rulers, governing authorities at every level, scientists, law enforcement officials, role models, entertainers, etc. Its influence overshadows socioeconomic status, and it has an incomparable influence in art, culture, music, movies, books, magazines, radio, television, and so forth. But what's so special about it? What's the big deal with it? Why does it have the power and influence that it has? Before we go any further, I want to address what the word Bible actually means, because with labels, I believe that false impressions can be generated, especially if they are contrived from conventional wisdom. A quick for example of this dynamic is when people commonly refer to the Bible as a quote-unquote religious book. I have noticed on numerous occasions when I have debated people over the years who outright reject it or are skeptical of it, they sort of regard the Bible as a single book that tells people what to do and how to act. In other words, to them, they perceive it as sort of a control mechanism to dictate someone's life. In fact, I think that misconceptions like these are also aided in general impressions people have on the Bible. Sometimes these impressions are fed through their favorite comedians or through Hollywood or through the media, and people just basically establish a belief system based on what their favorite entertainer says as opposed to going into it themselves, and then that basically starts in motion a belief system where they end up having more faith in their entertainer's cynical view than they actually have themselves because they've never looked into it themselves. They're just taking the people that they like's word for it. But it's interesting because if you look in a modern dictionary, you will be given a definition that states that it is the holy book of the Jews and Christians. That definition, I feel, sort of narrow-mindedly compartmentalizes what it really is, what its function is supposed to be, and what impact it has both to a person and thus society as a whole. First off, the word Bible comes from the Greek word biblia, which means simply books. There are a total of 66 books in this collection of books that chronicles a unique history of a people and civilization in the ancient East. The nature of the human heart, where that nature leads, with or without the sovereign power, the one that is identified as creator of the universe, earth, man, and every living thing, he's referred to as God, and his role in guiding that particular civilization's history, and challenges us to see where we fit today in comparison to similar behaviors, similar outlooks, and similar mindsets that occurred in times past, the times that were chronicled in this book. It sounds like a lot to swallow, and yes it is. But what comes out of these 66 books continues to come out today. in this day and age, but with more distractions. And that, and in that, many ways it generates a culture of obliviousness and causes confusion and difficulty in trying to properly pin down and identify outlooks, mindsets, and behaviors in relation to what this creator of the universe, Earth, and man defines as truth. What he defines as right and wrong, and what each decision leads to in accordance with having faith in this Creator's word, and making inward and outward decisions based on it, or having faith in the intellect, understanding, and ability of mankind outside of the influence of this Creator. When we return to Making Sense with Rob Case, we will ask you a very hypothetical question regarding this book's importance. Why is it regarded as the most popular and perhaps most important book in the world? Find out this and more when we return to Making Sense with Rob Case. In order to survive, thrive, and know your surroundings, one must acquire a sense of direction, order, and set of principles to follow. At the Making Sense message boards, we not only do all of those things, but we make it interesting. Visit makingsense.proboards.com to see what the deal is. And don't forget to listen to Making Sense with Rob Case right here on this channel. Write it down and make it a priority. It's the dawn of a new era, and we want you to be making sense. Visit makingsense.proboards.com today. We now return to Making Sense with Rob Case. In talking about the Bible, one may wonder why this book is the most popular book in the world. Well, let's examine some of the reasons why it is the most popular book in the world. And let's kind of elaborate on them a little bit. Okay, number one, it is a history book that reads as such. In other words, the Bible does not require imagination in order to understand it or read it. It's very plain and very ordinary. It's the same level of plainness that you get when you read the newspaper in the morning, or it's the same level of plainness that you get when you read any sort of publication. In other words, something that simply describes something. You're reading it, it's just requiring that you read and listen. It doesn't involve, like for example, like in the old days, during the time of the Greeks, when they would actually worship and regard as real gods, their mythological gods. Gods such as Zeus, Poseidon, Perseus, all those types that are within like the Clash of the Titans movies and such and so forth of that particular nature. The ancient Greeks actually regarded them as gods and actually worshipped them, even though they were in reality mythological beings from a city called Olympus, which has no geographic location that can be proven or pinpointed or anything like that. And the Bible is not like, you know how like when you go to a museum and sometimes the guides will point to certain masks and they'd say, oh, these masks are to ward off the pygmy gods or something like that, you know. So in other words, it requires imagination in order to submit yourself to understand what these people once believed. The Bible does not do that. It doesn't require that you use your imagination in order to see that these things are actually true. Because, for example, the particular places that are located within the Bible, they have geographic locations. For example, Mount Sinai. I mean, There were these documentaries, actually a whole collection of documentaries, where they discover, like, okay, where Mount Sinai is. Okay, that's a geographic location. It's located in this particular area. Or these archaeological videos that describe precisely certain names, certain places, and certain events that are attributed in the Bible. So you can see that it is a history book in every sense possible, whereas, you know, you have, again, geographic locations. You have remnants of things that still exist in the ground where they have unearthed and they have actually says, oh, okay, so this is like, um, this is talking about King David. There are remains of certain people, prominent people that were in the Bible. And so this continues on in a variety of ways. And so that's just basically, that's kind of more of what they call archaeological evidences that would have cultural traces that would align themselves to the text that is documented. So you have that particular dynamic. But then also, and I think this is probably the most important one, is that through history, we are taught lessons of right and wrong decision making. And this kind of takes the Bible as being a history book to a different, more unique level. In fact, it's very interesting that in the founding of this nation, in America's earliest days, earliest years, earliest decades, and so forth, they actually taught the Bible as a history book. And they were able to maintain a free society, establish law, order, and a court system based on those particular dynamics. In fact, a lot of America's earlier systems were modeled after the system that God used in relation to Moses and the tribes he used and in order to get things to where he could be the leader and have things organized to where it would be like a system of government, a governmental type of system that we would use in our culture, in our history. But the thing is that we are taught lessons of right and wrong decision making through the Bible in using it in the context of a history book. Because remember, we're closing it off in that particular context. If we are taught lessons of right and wrong decision making, then we may be less likely or more likely to repeat history once again. It's like that one quote where those who are not aware of their history are doomed to repeat it. That in and of itself is one small piece of truth that gives the Bible its significant power. It's a small nugget, very small nugget, but nonetheless it is a nugget. George Santayana, who was a Spanish-American philosopher, is famous for the quote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." And in that, he basically said that in Reason in Common Sense, Volume 1, The Life of Reason. And in that alone, that particular quote says everything. Because if you make right decisions, you will get right results. If you make wrong decisions, you will get wrong results. Well, who determines what is right? Who determines what is wrong? And what basically that means is that if God says something is right, something is wrong, God basically established the system which defines right from wrong. We call that the law. And in that, people who have defected from that law went into their own understanding, went into their own perceptions, how they perceive things to be, and from there went into a completely different path that was basically that grew in depravity, grew in complacency, and got to the point, got to the very level to where they could not make sensible decisions. And so God was upset with them. They would not turn away. So not only were they complacent, not only were they doing their own thing, but then they became stubborn towards any confrontation of, wait a minute, what you're doing is wrong. And so we see that very same dynamic working its components in this day and age. So the same things apply, the same things today go in the same directions as they did through by what this history book says. And it's very important to realize that and to know that. And it's extremely interesting. And I could probably go on the whole show just talking about this dynamic in and of itself, but I'm going to move on to number two. Okay, the Bible states that humankind is mind, soul, and spirit. And what it offers those three areas works in an exceptional and effective manner for those who apply it to their lives. That could be its own show as well. It states that humankind is mind, soul, and spirit. So basically, what you think, what you perceive, is your reality. And you make decisions, your will, which is a part of your soul. You will things based on, and pursue things based on what you think or how you want things to be. And so you're going to basically make decisions that are based on what's in your mind and what you like and all of that other stuff. They affect your perceptions. They affect your view of reality. And what happens is that in and of itself leads to decisions that lead to a certain outcome. And if you can discern the workings of what is going on in the mind and what is going on in the soul, then basically your spirit, which is your basically your tool of passion, will basically enable what is in the mind, and then it'll basically affect the soul. And then it'll affect not only you, but it'll affect those around you and how they favor you or how they disfavor you. And so that's in practical application. That's if you're going to apply the Bible in that particular context, almost in the sense of personal application. And so, but basically, you have this dynamic where you can basically discern and pinpoint exactly what is going on, because what happens is truth, and truth defined by right and wrong and through the law, will be able to make sharp contrasts to what is right and what is wrong. What God said is right and wrong, and how people basically make decisions based on what God says is right and wrong, and then you'd be able to basically see, just like in history, just like today, how those decisions based on what you're thinking, based on your will, based on your passions, will basically lead to a certain outcome. So you can, as long as you can discern those things, and that's where the Holy Spirit comes in extremely handy, and he's very important because he's the Spirit of Truth. He basically causes conviction, and he also draws sharp contrasts as to what is right, what is wrong, and gives you a sharp sense of what is really going on. That some people, if you told them exactly what they were thinking, or if you told them, if you wrapped it up in a certain perspective, they wouldn't be able to understand it. They can't understand it because their reality is based on what they think. And if you go objectively beyond that, then they're going to either take it, most people will take it offensively, or they will deny it, or they will just see you as crazy. But you can then use, you know, I mean, it's its own thing, but it's very interesting how this works and how what the Bible, everything that the Bible says in relation to the mind, soul, spirit is accurate. It's true. It can be relied upon, and you can see it as if, you know, like these people are like people are robots doing exactly as the manual describes. It's a very interesting, very fascinating thing. I'm going to go on to the next one. Number three, using the means of the law that God established, he defines what the concept of sin is and how it works against him and us if we choose to go against what he says. This is a very loaded point also. And one of the things that I think is absolutely fascinating is the fact that God established a law. A law that says, okay, this is what is offensive to me. This is what, in other words, this is also what is offensive to you because I created you. This is what will destroy you if you do not obey what I say. And he defines what the concept of sin basically is. In other words, it's anything that goes against him. And so, but usually when I describe the concept of sin, I define it as a willful violation against a direct order or a designed purpose. And when you see it in that particular light, in the light of how God established everything and how God defines right from wrong, you can basically see how those things birth mindsets. They birth strongholds, which are basically wrong patterns of thinking. And they basically get you to get involved in a behavioral pattern that eventually ends up consuming your time and gets you closer and closer to death. And then from there, it is accountability time, because every soul is made for God. And that is what the Bible says. And because everything is made by him and for him, including us. So if we decide to follow what we want, we become our own gods. And this is kind of like what we're talking about in number two, where it says that humankind is mind, soul, and spirit. And if the mind says that if it's all revolved around us and we are our biggest priorities, then what will happen is then we will treat ourselves as if we are our own gods. And we are central above everything else. and our decisions, our outlooks, and everything will reflect that. And it'll basically consume our souls. And it'll basically make us poisonous influences and poisonous personalities. And then eventually, then comes the time of accountability. And that's what it says. There's going to be a time when all men will have to give an account before God. And that is a very fascinating dynamic. When we come back, we will go to number four, and we'll be right back. In order to survive, thrive, and know your surroundings, one must acquire a sense of direction, order, and set of principles to follow. At the Making Sense message boards, we not only do all of those things, but we make it interesting. Visit makingsense.proboards.com to see what the deal is. And don't forget to listen to Making Sense with Rob Case right here on this channel. Write it down and make it a priority. It's the dawn of a new era, and we want you to be making sense. Visit makingsense.proboards.com today. We now return to Making Sense with Rob Case. We were discussing some of the things that the Bible is. You know, it's a history book. We've stated that it chronicles the nature of mind, soul, and spirit. It uses the means of law that God established, what he defines as sin, and how it works against him and us. And so we were talking about these dynamics in a very fast manner, and I would like to continue talking about that with the fourth point that I'd like to make, is that the Bible introduces us to the nature of metaphysical influences that works mainly outside of what can be seen physically, that has the ability to influence us in the areas of our mind, soul, and spirit to sin, and from that sin place us into a kingdom that runs counter to the kingdom God has established for humankind. That is a loaded, loaded statement. And that could probably be released into a series. But what do I mean by that? What does that mean to basically, what are metaphysical influences? Well, basically they are influences. Jesus calls them demons. And Jesus also describes a being by the name of Satan, who is basically God's chief adversary. And it's very interesting, because when you look at metaphysical influences in this sense, when you look at the topic and the subject of demons and stuff, they do exist, and they are basically they can be summoned, they affect our lives. There is something there that is outside of what we can see, taste, hear, smell, and so forth, that is basically at work within humanity. And they carry on the very same traits that the Bible describes that they carry in it. So basically, when people basically dispel demons from people, because there are demon possessions, there are records of demon possessions, there are all sorts of books, documentaries, and so forth of just demon possession and just demonic influence, even from Satanists. Satanists who had political influence in churches to try to lead them astray. There's a whole system that runs in that particular realm alone, in that particular area, and there's a lot of rich information in that. It would put to great fear and great awe to people who actually see these dynamics. It would definitely make you think. And it's not just, you know, oh, blah, blah, blah. There's some red guy in pajamas who has a beard and horse hooves or whatever they are, and, you know, we're carrying a pitchfork. And so that image, that caricature is fantasy. But there is definitely a force that alludes to a personality with an agenda that we cannot see, hear, touch, or whatever. We can't see that person. But the Bible gives us exactly what we need to be able to discern what this influence is, how to detect him, how to basically see him without seeing him. In other words, he'll make his mark into a room before he technically enters it. And so this particular influence can lead us into a whole nother realm, a whole nother world that we are not used to seeing by just the simple five senses. And it's very interesting to see that. And I'd like to elaborate that on that at some point in the future. But I do want to move on to number five because we're running out of time. And that through the means of prophecy, the Bible tells us the future and what to expect and prepare for. This is one of the things that has captivated me for years. And it is the realm of Bible prophecy. It basically says, here's the future. This is what's going to happen. Go. And remember when we were talking about history and we were talking about how those who are, you know, we use that quote basically that stated that those who are not aware of history are doomed to repeat it. Well, this works in the same fashion because if you let go of truth, if you have the truth in your heart, if you have Jesus Christ in your heart, and if Christ is centered in not only your heart, but in a majority of the community's heart, and is centered in a political structure, then it's going to go a certain way. When you defect from that particular area, you become easily influenced, impressionable, and more likely to fall under a person's subjective control. And in that, you are likely to fall to a delusion. And once you fall to a particular delusion and you defect from the truth, you basically end up fulfilling everything that the Bible says that you will fulfill in due time. And that is exactly what is actually occurring at this moment in so many different levels. But I'm going to stop it right there because I'm out of time. But what I will say is that these five reasons as to why the Bible is the most popular and perhaps most important book in the world leads me to make the conclusion that it provokes an unprecedented level of both curiosity and intrigue in the mind. It calls for a change of heart and its priorities, where it is in relation to where one is at in relation to what God says is the truth, and what a person accepts and receives as truth, and by the choices he makes on that merit, that determines the final destination of a person's soul, and even to societies, to where society leads. It's a lot to digest, but that is part of what makes the Bible so captivating. And what I would like to do is I would actually like to even discuss further some other dynamics in the works that I'm sure you would be very interested in. So, on that note, I'm going to have to say thank you for listening to this edition of Making Sense with Rob Case, and good night. You have been listening to Making Sense with Rob Case. Making Sense with Rob Case is a product of Robert W. Case Productions, copyright 2013.